We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
AFA Action takes attacks on the family seriously. The enemies of the family constantly employ new tactics to try to sneak past our radar. They know if we stand together, their evil plans will fail. Your gift to AFA Action allows us to stay vigilant against their onslaught. And if you give this month, you'll receive access to the Cultural Institute video, When Your Faith is Illegal, by Frank Harbor on AFA Stream as our thanks. You can make your gift today at afaaction.net.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, or it's not Tuesday, it's Thursday already. I'm trying to add to my work week. It is Thursday, September 26th, and breaking late last night, the New York City mayor, Eric Adams, has been indicted by a grand jury after a probe into federal corruption, and the indictment has not yet been unsealed, so we are not sure what charges are contained. This coming from the New York Times, Eric Adams, a retired police captain who was elected as New York City's 110th mayor nearly 3 years ago on a promise to rein in crime, has been indicted following a federal corruption investigation, people with knowledge of the matter said on Wednesday. The indictment remained sealed on Wednesday night, and it was unclear what charge or charges Mr. Adams will face. But when they are made public, he'll become the first New York City mayor to be criminally charged while in office. So New York Times was the first to break that story. AOC has been the most prominent New Yorker to call for Eric Adams to resign. So we will keep you posted on that interesting story. Democrats going after Democrats. Look at that. But let's turn to what's going on in Florida with Hurricane Helene. I saw a headline this morning that it has been upgraded to a Category 2. So let's welcome in Jimmy Petronis, who is Florida's chief financial officer and state fire marshal. And good morning, Jimmy. And what is the status here in Florida?
Hey, Jenna. Thank you for having me. It's the calm before the storm here in Tallahassee. As we were all over the state yesterday visiting with all the local emergency operations centers, everybody that is in the path of this storm or storm surge is just getting prepared. You know, the best thing that we can do is just encourage those that are in those low-lying areas to evacuate. You know, the biggest concern is storm surge. Homes now are getting more resilient. They're dealing with high force winds better, but nothing can stop storm surge. And storm, you know, it's, you run from the wind, you hide from the water. And the water is what I'm afraid is going to be the biggest loss of life driver if people don't heed those warnings.
Yeah, and it is so important for those who are especially in the worst areas to make sure that they take preparation, that they do evacuate if that is what is called for, and to listen to all of these emergency messages. And so how prepared is the area on the Gulf Coast that is looking like it'll be the hardest impact? I saw a lot of the traffic that was coming from Tampa Bay into Central Florida, some of those videos. So it looks like a lot of people are getting out of the way. Generally, are most people following those directions?
Yeah, and in the populated areas, especially around Tampa Bay, we went straight to Tampa Bay yesterday morning. And just to get out and turn up the volume in those densely populated areas, one of the side effects that's there when the federal government is pushing out $7,500 tax credits for EVs, what happens? People buy EVs. Well, storm surge areas and EVs do not mix. From Hurricane Ian, we discovered how catastrophic this combination is. And we had 18 EVs, hundreds of golf carts, e-bikes, all caught fire. And in the case, if you have your car in your garage and you evacuate or hire land, and maybe you survived the storm, but your car got inundated with salt water, now this thing becomes literally a risk to you, your home, and those firefighters, because once an EV catches fire, there's no way to put it out. So this was the big concern that we had, especially in the Tampa Bay market, simply because how heavy the population is. And as we cruised up the coast, stopping at all these other emergency operations centers, these are the exact same areas that were impacted by Debbie earlier this year and Idalia last year, almost the exact same path. So these people are pretty, weather torn from the last 2 years of storms they've dealt with.
Yeah, which is just so sad that they're rebuilding and now, you know, this next hurricane is hitting. But, you know, that's Florida, and we are in the midst of this season. And that's a really good point as far as EVs and people just making sure that in the area that they live, they make the best choices, not necessarily what's being advertised to them. And speaking of advertising, you also posted last night on your social media, and people can follow you on social media at Jimmy Patronis, a video saying, you know, do not sign anything in the wake of the hurricane and people maybe, you know, coming to your door asking about that. Talk about that and how important it is for people to be aware of their rights as well.
So, you know, during storms, especially, you know, immediately after recovery, we see the absolute best in humanity, the giving, the monies that come through, the help, people wanting to come and remove debris. But we see the absolute worst also. And it's hard to believe that people can be this sinister. But because our storm victims are vulnerable, they don't have access to power, maybe don't have access to internet, these predators will be pre-staged outside of those storm areas better than the utility companies. And they will canvass the neighborhoods, and they will basically essentially get you to sign a contract, an assignment of benefits, or directional payments, and they're essentially taking your claim from you, that you are giving them the rights to take over. And when you do that, then they direct the money. You know, you may get some services out of it, but it may be 400-500% over what should be the cost of doing business. So, you know, I've just been pleading with people, if you don't sign anything, you're going to be okay. But you know what? We still have these bottom feeders that will forge signatures. So, I mean, this is why we will put out our strike teams. You know, we will collaborate with local law enforcement. And anybody who takes advantage of our citizens, we'll put them in jail. But it's just sad that that's the type of human that comes out after events like this.
It really is. I mean, it's just sad that people will take advantage of other people's tragedies, and you're absolutely right that if people don't sign anything, then they can still maintain all of their options. But you know, if they go and believe one of these people that's just trying to take advantage of them, then they're signing over their claims and may unfortunately not get the benefits that they deserve. So where should people go who are in Florida or even elsewhere, but that this hurricane may impact, but especially in Florida, to find out about preparation and actually what is the right way to deal with some of these things and getting the correct information, not from some of these scammers?
Sure. So visiting preparefl.com is a great resource of building your hurricane disaster plan and getting updates. All the local emergency operations centers in the counties of the affected areas have been pretty aggressive with their social media and getting their shelters open. And, you know, and the great thing is, you know, we hear stories that, you know, well, I don't want to leave my pets. And so that's why people will stay at their home. We've had to, over the last, this is 18 years I've been doing this, but we evolve. We have special needs shelters, but we also have pet shelters. And we have had instances where, because we've had a pet shelter, we've saved people's lives. So, you know, those folks out there that are listening, you know, please understand that we're going to provide every solution for you. And, you know, if you just evacuate, you know, you don't have to evacuate to Georgia. You can evacuate 10 to 15 miles from where you're at right now. Just get away from the storm surge. Go be in one of those shelters, and then we're going to protect your stuff. Law enforcement will be very vigilant to make sure that nobody is looting or takes advantage of you while we're in our time of need.
Yeah, and it's so important. Our pets need us, and for people who are staying because of it, just take them with you. And it's so great to know that Florida cares about all of the animals that need us as well. And I know that Governor DeSantis has mentioned that so often, and is taking so much preparation, the whole administration, to ensure as much safety as you all possibly can for Floridians. So right now, as you mentioned, it's kind of the calm before the storm. And I'm speaking to Jimmy Petronis, who is Florida's chief financial officer and the state fire marshal. Where right now does it look like the path for Hurricane Helene is, and kind of the worst areas that you're asking people to evacuate from?
So all the low-lying areas along, you know, Suwanee County, Taylor County, Citrus County, Pasco, Hernando, all those areas, all through there, Franklin County, Wakulla, those counties there have low-lying areas, as they all are on the Gulf of Mexico. And those are the ones that are going to be susceptible to storm surge. So you've got those communities out there that are Gulf front communities, not heavily densely populated, but are very low-lying. But, you know, these communities are the exact same communities that had dealt with Idalia and Debbie. And Idalia and Debbie were strong storms, but not nearly the intensity that we're going to see with Helene. Helene is going to be a monster. It's already a Cat 2, and potentially could end up being a Cat 4 by the time it makes landfall.
Wow. And as somebody who is relatively new to the state of Florida in terms of residency, I mean, these types of things I'm not as familiar with. And I know there's a lot of people who have recently moved into Florida who aren't as familiar with this as native Floridians and understanding, you know, the differences. And so what are we talking about in terms of the categories, you know, 1 through 5, and how serious this actually is?
Sure. So if you look at Hurricane Michael, that was a Category 5 that hit Panama City, Mexico Beach area, and it literally wiped Michael off of the map. Hurricane Michael was a windstorm event more so than a storm surge event. This particular storm has a lot of the same characteristics of Michael. It is going to have a storm surge with it. But, you know, what we're going to see as it ramps up to the coastal areas, it's going to gain strength. And, you know, I've never seen so much anxiety over a storm and panic over a storm like I have seen regarding Helene. This storm has gotten everyone ramped up. Jim Cantore has been living here in Tallahassee for the last 3 days straight, and he knows it's going to have huge effects on this part of the state. Tallahassee is a tree community. We love our trees here in Tallahassee. Unfortunately, when you get, you know, the water gets in the ground, saturates the ground, these trees are essentially in grass and, I mean, almost like a mud consistency. So, you know, a strong wind will knock these massive 100-year-old oak trees down, and it'll have a devastating effect on Tallahassee and in the neighboring counties around us.
Wow. Well, everyone should go to preparefl.com, and get your disaster plan. You still have time this morning during the calm before the storm, and stay safe out there. And Jimmy Petronis, really appreciate all of the work that you and everyone else in law enforcement and with Governor DeSantis are working and doing it just so hard to make sure that Florida stays safe. Thank you so much for joining this morning. Really appreciate your time. And we will be going into break now and talking about the vice presidential debate coming up. But make sure that you are praying for Florida and making sure that if you are living here, as I am, that you make sure that you have a disaster plan. Make sure that you are going out and you are prepared, and also make sure that you are getting your resources and your knowledge information from the actual official sources. Don't, you know, believe other people, as Jimmy said, who may be scammers or who may just want to take advantage of you. So we will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. If ending babies' lives in their mother's womb isn't heartbreaking enough, the Biden-Harris administration punishes those who protect life, including up to 10 years in jail. In a shocking stance, the Democrats' vice presidential nominee, Tim Walz, supports infanticide, meaning the death of newborns. When will this madness end? Preborn's network of clinics is positioned in the highest abortion areas in the country, on standby to protect and love mothers facing unplanned pregnancies. By introducing a woman to her baby through ultrasound and showering her with God's love, her baby's chance at life doubles. But they can't do it without our help. If you are pro-life, please consider a donation of any size to support the mission of Preborn. All gifts are tax deductible and will help defend the defenseless. One ultrasound is just $28, or five ultrasounds is $140. $5,000 will sponsor ultrasounds for Preborn's entire network for a full day. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR, preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And so Tuesday, actually, remember today is Thursday, not Tuesday, but looking forward to next Tuesday, we will be watching the first and only vice presidential debate in this 2024 election. And some interesting notes about this. So it will take place October 1st. We broadcast on CBS, but of course you can watch it on all the streaming channels and so forth. But there was an interesting headline as well from the New York Times that Vance and Walz will debate standing up, a rarity for VP clashes. We all remember the last vice presidential debate between Kamala Harris and Mike Pence with the infamous fly, and of course they were seated. So will that matter? And what can we expect from J.D. Vance and Tim Walz? Well, joining us now is our good friend Mark Lauder, who is the Chief Communications Officer at the America First Policy Institute. Good morning, Mark, and what should we expect from the VP clash?
I think it's more correctly viewed as a proxy war. you know, look, the VP, nobody votes for the undercard, and so I think once the two candidates check the box that they are qualified to be a heartbeat away, they spend the rest of the entire debate basically trying to surrogate attack their opponent's presidential nominee rather than anything that's like actually on their slate.
Yeah, and I think that's a proxy debate is actually a really apt way of putting it. However, there have been a lot of headlines and clashes between, you know, Tim Walz over amplifying, exaggerating, or even lying about his military service record. Of course, J.D. Vance has the childless cat lady headlines and all of that. We might see some of those kinds of personal attacks against it. I'm just very interested to see how Tim Walz will approach J.D. Vance, who is a lot younger than him, but is very capable. I mean, we all remember J.D. Vance in the debate in his Ohio Senate race, and he's a very excellent debater. So, I mean, he is more than capable of, I think, really shining against someone like a Tim Walz.
Oh, absolutely. I think Senator Vance is going to be a very capable debater, and I think it'll be very difficult for Tim Walz to debate him because he is experienced and he does do this often, whether as it relates to his service in the Senate, where they're debating policies and they're debating various aspects of legislation. So he will be formidable, but ultimately this is going to come down to who can make the better case for their candidate, whether that be Donald Trump or whether that be Kamala Harris, because that's really what people are voting for. Again, nobody votes for the vice president. They don't walk in there and say, I'm voting for blank for vice president. They may say, well, J.D. Vance convinced me to vote for Donald Trump or helped move me over to Donald Trump, but he's actually not going to be the one ultimately that's who gets voted for.
Yeah, and that all completely makes sense, and it's an opportunity, I think, for these two vice presidential candidates to talk about the record of their respective ticket partners and their records in the administrations without them actually being on stage. So rather than kind of this back and forth, it'll be more about what Donald Trump accomplished in his first 4 years in his administration. And then Kamala Harris does have to answer for the Biden administration, as much as the Democrats have been trying to project her as kind of this new way forward. And, you know, she's totally not responsible for anything that's gone on in the last 3 years. But this headline was very interesting coming from The Hill. It says that Vance is less popular than Walz pre-debate polling. So the poll conducted by the Associated Press found that 57% of registered voters have an unfavorable view of Vance, up from 48% in an August poll. Only 27% of registered voters have a favorable view. Walz scores more favorably, with 42% having a favorable view and 32% having an unfavorable view. What do you think about that?
Well, it doesn't surprise me. Obviously, you know, when it's a great advantage to be a Democrat when you have the entire corporate media culture and structure that's entirely focused on attacking one side and then providing cover for the other. So they will literally do everything they can to protect Tim Walz, to hide the lies that were made by Tim Walz, or try to excuse them, because they know at this point these are the two vice presidential nominees, and they'll really do anything they can. You know, as we even saw with the interview last night with Stephanie Ruhle and Kamala Harris, who had just previously, in a few weeks earlier, said she doesn't need to answer questions. That's just not something she has to do because Donald Trump is bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, since the mainstream media is basically, as you say, protecting Kamala Harris, and it's now been, you know, what, close to 68 days, I think, is the count. I get that alert from Fox News every morning saying, you know, it's been 60 plus days that Kamala Harris hasn't had a press conference, hasn't actually answered questions from the press. So she's done a couple of these sit down interviews, but they haven't gone well for her, certainly. I think Tim Walz has his work cut out for him to project joy and all of the vagueness of the policies that have been the Kamala Harris campaign. And so what does J.D. Vance have to do, Mark Lauder, to convince maybe some of the moderates and independents that are considering voting for Trump to bring them into solidly into that camp?
Well, I think there's two things. Number one, you have to remind people that all of your complaints, all of your concerns about the high price of gas, groceries, the wide open southern border, the wars that are raging in the Middle East and in Europe are Kamala Harris and Joe Biden's fault. And they happened on their watch and things weren't that way. And then remind them that things were cheaper. Border was more secure. World was safer when Donald Trump was in office. You can use Tim Walz as a easy foil for reminding people of just how liberal and how far to the left radical Kamala Harris is, even though she was ranked the most liberal senator, even further to the left than comrade Bernie Sanders. Remember, it was Tim Walz who made Minnesota a trans sanctuary where kids can go get their bodies permanently altered, even if their parents disagree. Even if their parents are opposed to it, the state of Minnesota will take your kids from you and allow those surgeries to happen. Or the fact that babies are allowed, who survive botched abortions, are allowed to die. And rather than fixing the law to protect babies, he changed the rule so they didn't have to report it to the state anymore. Those are the radical policy positions that even most people, even if you're a little further to the middle, maybe, you go, you shake your head about that. You disagree with that because it's so far to the radical left.
Yeah, I'm speaking with Mark Lauder, who is the chief communications officer at AFPI, about the vice presidential debate coming up next Tuesday, October 1st. And this will be broadcast on CBS. And of course, during the first presidential debate between Trump and Harris, a lot of the commentary, and rightly so, afterwards was on how very obviously biased and truly unfair the moderators were in terms of fact-checking Donald Trump, but letting Kamala Harris say whatever she wanted, interrupting, you know, some of those things that really didn't treat both of the candidates fairly. What can we probably expect from moderators at CBS?
Well, I think the moderators at CBS are probably going to play much like, I would say, I expect them to be a lot like the moderators from CNN during the debate with Biden, that they're going to allow the two candidates to actually be the stars of the show. You know, of all the networks, I would tell you that, and even though they are very liberal, I would tell you that CBS is the one that is most probably concerned about their journalistic integrity. They still believe that they are the network of Walter Cronkite and what we commonly refer to as the Tiffany Network. And so they take that very seriously. So I would be surprised if they allowed themselves to become the distractions rather than letting the two candidates have it out on their own.
Yeah, and certainly it's not quite as high of stakes, and it's not as tempting, perhaps, for the moderators to inject themselves as it is when Donald Trump is on the stage. So overall, do you think that the vice presidential debate moves the needle at all, or is this going to be something that people more or less don't really care about, I suppose, in terms of overall politics? And it's just, you know, people like you and me that tune in with our popcorn because we have to talk about it on air.
I don't think it really moves the needle much either way. Now, there's always the chance that someone's going to commit, you know, a horrendous gaffe. But even then, again, people vote for the top of the ticket. So I would anticipate that this thing will largely be, you know, a draw in terms of where things stand in the race. I don't necessarily mean that one may not win over the other, but I don't think it moves the needle either way. I think people tune in to basically see, are either of these two people capable of being a heartbeat away from the presidency? And once they figure that out, and we really haven't had that debate in a very long time. So I think almost all of the candidates, even if we disagree with them, have largely been viewed as being over as qualified. And so once we check that box, I think then it's just more about popcorn and seeing if anybody gets a good one-liner in.
Yeah, and I'm really very interested to see if Mike Pence's fly will show up for J.D. Vance. So that's going to be, I mean, what's the over-under? I mean, we probably need to take the betting odds on that one. So I don't know if anybody has started that poll yet, but that was one of the greatest events in 2020, in my opinion. And I think the one that everybody remembers the most from the VP debate. But Mark Lauder, my special guest this morning, turning to another headline that I want to get your thoughts on as well, this coming from the Associated Press. House Republicans are advancing contempt charges against Secretary Blinken over Afghan testimony. So Republicans on the House Foreign Affairs Committee on Tuesday advanced contempt charges against Secretary of State Antony Blinken following a contentious back and forth with the cabinet secretary over an appearance to testify on the chaotic U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. The 26 to 25 party line vote was just the latest friction point between the GOP and the State Department this Congress. So where is this potentially going with, you know, not that long before the congressional recess?
Well, I would have, you know, obviously they're gone already. So I don't think that it's going to move between now and Election Day, since they got out of town. They passed the government funding bill and they're largely moved on now and won't be back until after Election Day. I have no doubt that eventually they will probably hold him in contempt. But really, I mean, again, it won't go anywhere. The Biden DOJ will not choose to prosecute it. But flip the script. I mean, could you imagine if Secretary Pompeo had not shown up to Nancy Pelosi, Democrat-run committee hearings back when they were in office? They would have literally demanded that he be taken into custody. They would have been, you know, oh, it's a threat to democracy. It's flouting the rules of government. And just like we always see with Democrats, it's double standards. It's okay when they do it, but if it happens on the other side, then it's the end of the world.
Well, and so why aren't Republicans that forceful? Because, I mean, if they're seriously even trying to hold him in contempt and they actually want his testimony and think that their subpoenas matter, why? I mean, and Speaker Johnson told reporters late Tuesday that, as you said, the measure likely won't be taken up until after the presidential election, probably because Republicans are concerned about political optics. The Democrats never are. And they get away with moving and advancing their narrative forward. But Republicans are always so hesitant to pursue actually, you know, some things that they're entitled to and have the power to do.
Well, even if they do hold him in contempt, and I do eventually believe that they will hold him in contempt, that gets referred to the Department of Justice to execute that. And the Department of Justice under Joe Biden has shown no willingness to hold anyone in contempt unless they are Trump officials. They're not going to go execute that search warrant. And Congress doesn't really have the ability to self-enforce its own contempt charge. So that's where we get into that rub, is that they need the executive branch to execute that search warrant or that contempt citation on their own, and they just choose not to do it. And, of course, the mainstream media and everyone else gives them a pass. And so, you know, again, the election will have taken place by then, even though contempt of Congress is not any less serious after the election rather than it is before the election. But you can pretty much be assured that I'm assuming that right next to Hunter's commutation or pardon will be the, you know, the official documents basically dismissing the contempt charge against Secretary Mayorkas or Secretary Blinken.
Yeah. And I think we're going to see a lot of those types of actions after the election, which, you know, is so predictable. And yet, you know, everybody just pretends that, you know, somehow, you know, nothing like that is going to happen. And then everything, of course, changes after November 5th and after there's not a lot of political pressure. But that's also true even for the Republican side. Speaker Johnson has said, at least according to it was Representative Andy Biggs I was talking to, said that the Congress may take up impeachment articles against President Biden after the election. But I'm thinking, I mean, what's the point, honestly? I mean, if they were going to do that, it should have been 2 years ago, not when he's literally on his way out of office.
Well, and also what you definitely know, just like we saw with the impeachment of Secretary Mayorkas, that Chuck Schumer and the Democrats and the radicals that control the United States Senate will just brush it under the rug, dismiss it without a hearing. And they will be seen defending democracy by doing this. But Lord knows if this gets turned around the other direction, you know, that they will be calling for people's heads.
Oh, of course. And I can you imagine if the same thing had happened with the ridiculous impeachment of Donald Trump and if the Senate had just said, you know, no, this is so ridiculous. It was a perfect phone call with Zelensky, all of that, and said, you know, we're not even going to hold a trial on this. I mean, that would have been earth shattering. And the mainstream media, as much as they were talking about impeachment and it dominated the headlines for, you know, 3 or 4 months or more, that would have been, you know, the threat to democracy and all of these things. And yet the Democrats, again, they can just do whatever they want and move on. And the mainstream media and certainly nobody else, it seems like, is holding them accountable, which is why ultimately it matters to vote. We, the voters, get to hold both sides accountable if we don't like what they're doing and how they are acting and choosing to act with their powers or ignoring some of their duties and obligations. So, Mark Lauder, really appreciate your commentary as always. We're already out of time. I always have so much more I could talk with you about, but you can follow Mark Lauder on X. He is the Chief Communications Officer for AFPI, and we'll be very interested to see the vice presidential debate next week. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And as we are under 6 weeks before the 2024 election, abortion is on the ballot in 10 states and has become a major topic and certainly was in the first presidential debate. We'll see if that is a topic, likely so in the vice presidential debate. But we need to talk about the truth about what abortion really is, the extreme and radical position of the Harris-led Democrats. and where conservatives should be. So joining me now is former Representative Marilyn Musgrave. She was former representative for my former home state of Colorado, and she's the current vice president of government affairs for the Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America. So good morning, Marilyn. Thanks so much for joining us on this important topic.
Good morning. Glad to be with you.
Yeah. So, you know, there were several lies that were told about abortion in the first presidential debate. And I want to address those first, because, of course, ABC didn't fact check Kamala Harris on any of this. They were happy to just, you know, let her spout whatever. But I've seen, especially on social media, talking specifically about the constitutional amendments in the states that are on the ballot, that abortions don't happen in the ninth month of pregnancy. Late term abortions never happen. You know, we're only talking about, you know, a woman's right to get rid of the clump of cells, you know, between 12 and 15 weeks, which is just absolutely absurd anyway. But this is a lie that abortions don't happen in the late stages and the last months of pregnancy. What is the truth about that?
Well, first of all, what a blatant lie. And to have Lindsay Davis, the moderator, join in, it was beyond the pale. So when you really look at what's going on, abortion is legal through the entire pregnancy, 9 months, for any reason in 10 states, plus D.C. And the states are Alaska, California, saddens my heart so much, Colorado, Michigan, Minnesota, New Jersey, New Mexico, Ohio, Oregon, and Vermont. That means that the lives of innocent unborn children are being taken after the point in the pregnancy where they can feel pain. These are laws that are on the books. And I mean, to act like what he said was a misstatement and, you know, to get indignant, this is not happening. It's insulting to women. What is insulting to the American people is that this lie was not challenged.
Yeah, and it's and especially coming from the moderator, I think it was even worse than if Kamala Harris had challenged it and there was some back and forth between the candidates. You know, fine, let Americans decide and let them research the truth of the matter. But rather than the moderators, who tend to have at least a little bit more credibility, maybe not so much these days, especially after the ABC debate. But it seems to be that if they are, quote unquote, fact checking, then low information viewers will believe them over the candidates, specifically Donald Trump. And, you know, there is a there's data based on some pro-abortion outlets that have said in 2021, as many as 11,210 abortions were carried out in late pregnancy. I mean, this is just absolutely tragic. And for the amendments that are on the ballots in these 10 states, they are trying to cement a right to abortion without limits in these states. And it's just absolutely heartbreaking. And so what do voters need to know about some of these amendments and why this is so dangerous to have, like in my current home state of Florida, these terms like viability and healthcare provider that are completely undefined?
Well, first of all, the source, when you talked about over 11,000 abortions being carried out late in the pregnancy, that information came from the Guttmacher Institute. That's a pro-abortion research institute. So come on, people. Even Guttmacher is saying that those late-term abortions took place. I think one of the most disturbing things about these ballot initiatives is there's not a true debate. And these same kinds of lies, you know, late-term abortions are not happening. Babies are not surviving botched abortions and left to die. You know, there aren't abortion survivors. Infanticide is not taking place. And pro-life laws are causing women to die. These lies are put forth in these states where ballot initiatives are up, trying to enshrine the right of abortion in the state constitutions. And outside money comes in, and people are flooded with this misinformation, with these lies. And it sets the national narrative. And to think about this, we had Roe v. Wade overturned. I never thought I'd see that in my lifetime. And I've been in the pro-life movement many, many years. Oh, ye of little faith. But we now are seeing the pro-abortion side wanting to go further than Roe, led by Kamala Harris and Walz. I mean, the most pro-abortion candidates in history. Kamala Harris promoted the so-called Women's Health Protection Act, which would go further than Roe, and it would do away with every pro-life law in the United States. In pro-life states that have passed heartbeat bills, pain capable bills, parental consent, all these things would be done away with by this federal law, the so-called Women's Health Protection Act. So we are really up against it. And people need to be aware that lies are going forth in these campaigns to promote these pro-abortion ballot initiatives. And voters need to be aware that they need to look at the whole story about what is really extreme in this country, pro-abortion, supporting abortion at any time in the pregnancy for any reason. And in Colorado, paid for by your tax dollars. That's what's on the ballot in your home state of Colorado and my home state.
And I'm speaking with former Congresswoman Marilyn Musgrave, who is the Vice President of Government Affairs for Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America. And, you know, it seems like you mentioned that a lot of us in the pro-life movement did not think that Roe versus Wade would be overturned in our lifetimes, but that has been what the pro-life movement has advanced for many, many years since Roe was initially decided in the 70s. And yet that's not now the end, that we just sit back and say, okay, well, now it's left to the states and our work is done and it's completely fine, which is what it seems to be Donald Trump's position is, unfortunately. And so when we're talking about how the left is trying to then move the needle, they're outsmarting the pro-life movement, in my opinion, in some ways, because they're going after these constitutional amendments in states rather than just legislation that would overturn a heartbeat bill in Florida, for example, that then itself could be overturned. They're trying to undercut this by cementing a constitutional amendment that would be incredibly difficult, not impossible, but incredibly difficult to ever even just narrow in scope or define. And so they're going after now the state constitutions instead of just legislation. What is the best tactic for pro-lifers to ensure that we are still in this fight?
Well, we're really up against it right now. As you said, if they can pass these constitutional amendments, and they've already been successful in some states, you know, how do you get it out of the Constitution once it's been put in? It is extremely, extremely difficult. So their strategy is brilliant. We need resources. We need people talking about what these ballot initiatives really mean. And we're doing our best, the Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America, helping other groups in these states fight these ballot initiatives. But I would say to you that it is extremely daunting with the amount of money the other side has. And for Republicans and even former President Trump at the top of the ticket saying, you know, Roe v. Wade was overturned. Hallelujah. Now it's back to the states. Well, the other side, again, wants to pass the Women's Health Protection Act, which would go much further than Roe, all trimester pregnancies paid for by your tax dollars. Republicans need to stand up to that. I was in Congress when the partial birth abortion ban was signed into law by George W. Bush. I mean, of course there should be a federal role in protecting life. You know, should the place where the geography determine whether a child lives or dies? We need to stand up for life. Americans, again, oppose late-term abortion. That's why lie number one was told, reinforced by the moderators, And it's just incredible to think that people don't realize how extreme the other side is on this issue. You know, it used to be, and people weren't aware of the humanity of the unborn child. Wow, science is on our side. We can look at the baby with an ultrasound. We can see the little child moving. Voters need to be aware that lies are being told, and we need to put our resources, our efforts to refute these lies, and let people really know what is happening with this issue in our country.
Absolutely. And I really hope that Republicans, especially who are candidates or who are in office, will stand up for pro-life. And I've been so disappointed, frankly, that, you know, some of these members of Congress who ran on being ardently pro-life are now hesitant to make that same stand just because Donald Trump has said, you know, this isn't a federal issue. It's just at the states, which just isn't the truth. And to have the courage to just come out and say, no, we are still pro-life because that's what they ran on and those types of promises. But also, you know, one of the other lies that Kamala Harris and her campaign have been perpetuating, especially in the wake of the tragedy of that young mother from Georgia who took the at-home abortion pill and then waited a few days to go in and seek emergency health care. One of the lies is also that pro-life laws make it criminal somehow for a doctor to provide health care. And Florida has been saying, you know, of course, that that's just absolutely not true. There are still laws that require that that emergency providers provide health care. But that seems to be one of the ways that the Democrats are fear-mongering, trying to tell the lies about some of the abortion bans or heartbeat bills in the conservative states.
I think of these women dying. They did not need to die. These pro-life laws, when you look at the Georgia law, it's very clear that a doctor can treat a woman for a medical emergency. They, for them to propagate these lies, the other side, and say that a doctor cannot treat a woman and these women, first of all, the abortion pill is very dangerous, has many complications. One of these women got her abortion pills through the mail without seeing a doctor. And for these women not to seek treatment because of the lies that have been told saying pro-life laws are killing women, it is absolutely outrageous. These doctors can treat these women. I mean, one had sepsis. I mean, she didn't need to die, but it's the lies of the other side that are causing women to die. So it is heartbreaking to think of the unnecessary deaths of these women because the other side wants to go after pro-life laws. And again, as you said, they go to the ballot initiative process, not going through the legislature. We knew that when Roe v. Wade was overturned, we were anticipating that it would be getting ready. We knew the real work would begin then. We knew then that we had to show the compassionate side of the pro-life movement. Pregnancy resource centers, maternity homes around this country, unconditionally loving women and girls and there to help them, regardless of what their choices are. And to show that compassionate side and also to show that these pro-life laws are saving babies. Yesterday, I spent time with a woman that had an abortion clear back in the 70s, and she talked to me about how it had affected her life. We need to have compassion for women and girls that are in difficult positions. We need to be there for them, even if they chose abortion and want healing in their lives. And we need to stand and be there with the truth and support people who are running for office that will have the courage to stand for life. That's our job. That's what
Absolutely.
We should be doing.
So well said, and I think that every Christian and conservative listening needs to take that to heart, get involved in the pro-life movement, especially with your vote, but also with your heart and with everything that you can do within your church and your community. So Marilyn Musgrave, thank you so much for your comments today. We are already out of time, but be praying that these initiatives do not pass in the states. We stand for life. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna@AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.